This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On this week's episode, we continue our countdown to the Alltech FEI World Equestrian Games in Normandy when we hear from Sue Blinks, who was part of that silver medal winning team in Jerez back in 2002. But first, Dolly Hannon from Avada, Colorado, who is the chair of the USDF Freestyle Committee. She's a USDF certified instructor through second level and a USEFS judge, and she has some tips on showing. Hello, Dolly. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much. My pleasure. I've got a little list here of some dressage judges' pet peeves that a competitor should keep in mind when coming to the horse show. You want to be sure to show up to the ring on time, because even though when nervous at shows, we think that the gate person has the responsibility to get us up in time, to the ring in time, actually it's the competitor's responsibility. So be sure you show up to the ring on time. You have 45 seconds after the bell is rung to enter the ring. Failure to do so could result in elimination. Most judges are nice, but you want to get in there. You also want to be sure you show up with a well-groomed horse. Braiding is not required, but certainly looks tidier, and you want to make sure that your horse is very clean and that your clothes are clean, boots are polished. You want to really show pride in yourself and your horse. You want to be sure you know your test, even if you have a reader, because sometimes the readers might make a mistake. And as judges, we do not care either way if you have a reader or not. So if you've got some show nerves, have a reader and know the pattern. If the judge blows the whistle or rings the bell in the test, it means you need to stop, turn, and come talk to the judge. Please don't talk to the reader. That can get you into trouble. And the same thing goes for the reader of the test. If the judge blows the whistle, the judge will have the conversation with the competitor and then tell the reader where to resume reading. You want to try really hard to never lose your temper in the ring or after the test outside the ring, because our horses are always trying. Sometimes they try too hard. We have to look like we're always being fair to the horses. Try to remember to praise or pat your horse at the end of the test and look pleased, unless it was just the first test ever, which we certainly hope doesn't happen. You want to really look as if you reward your horse for their performance. Use of the voice in the ring can incur a 2-point deduction per occurrence. It is not a cumulative error, but you want to not cluck. Try really hard not to use your voice because it's not allowed in the showroom. You want to make sure that your tack fits properly. Your nose pin is not too low or too tight. I've seen quite a few very tight, low drop nose bands here, which can really impair the horse's ability to breathe. You also want to make sure your saddle stays back behind the horse's shoulders, let it slide forward, which is very uncomfortable for the horse. Make sure that your equipment, your bits, spurs are all legal, and that's in the current rule book. Try to be sure that with your turnout, your hair is contained. You have gloves. We don't care really what color, but you have gloves on, and that your coat fits well, not too large, not super tight. I think I mentioned already that during nice weather, it's very clean. If it's muddy, well, that's what happens. I think also one thing that's very important to mention is that we want to be sure that if you have multiple rules under a judge, that you have read your dressage test in between your rides and that you try to do what the judge has suggested on your test. It makes a big difference. We put a lot of time and effort into judging these tests. And if we can see that you have read your test and you're making an effort, for example, if you were cutting your corners and the judge mentioned that the next time you come in, that you try to ride into those corners and show the judge that you're making an effort. by before you try. Before you start your test, come by, tell the judge and or the scribe your number. Makes things a lot easier. We're not wondering if we have the right test in front of us. You want to be sure that your saddle pad is appropriate, meaning if you have a small pony, you don't have a huge pad. And I know that oftentimes we use counterflexion as an aid, as a schooling technique. You want to be sure not to strongly counterflex your horse in every corner or after transitions, because it's considered bending the wrong direction. So just keep that in mind. The judges will see it. We also get a little crabby about excessive, or a lot crabby, about excessive use of the whip or spur. If the horse needs correction, if it's appropriate, that's not a problem. But if the spurs for whip are used repetitively, that becomes a real problem. I'm seeing a lot less of instances of spur marks on the horses, which is great. And we really applaud that. That should not happen. Try to ride accurate figures. And be sure you're showing the horse at a level that's appropriate for its training. And then try also, this is my last little tip, to be sure your horse is in good condition. They should not be overweight or quite thin. Actually, I do have just one more. Be sure your horse is sound. You should feel if your horse feels irregular, because if the horse is not comfortable, the judge will blow the whistle, and you could be eliminated for lameness. Competitors need to know the rules, and the rules do change. You want to check online and see if there have been any rule changes for the competition year. So I think that's it. There's obviously more for different judges, but that should give you a few tips to improve your show experience.
And a reminder that each of the USDF's podcasts offers a tip from judges and trainers, and you can download all of them from iTunes and listen to them on your smartphone podcast app. And now, with just 17 days to go to the start of the Alltech FEI World Equestrian Games in Normandy, we continue our countdown as we look back at some of the previous American team performances. And in 2002, the American team came back triumphant from Jerez in Spain when they won the team silver medal. Deborah MacDonald rode Brentina, Lisa Wilcox rode Relevant, Gunter Seidel was aboard Nicholas 7, and Sue Blinks rode Flim Flam. And Sue joins us now to look back at that very special World Equestrian Games. Sue, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Greg. Good to be here.
Well, we're going to take a walk down memory lane, and what a happy memory it was. Jerez 2002. I bet you still relive those memories from time to time, don't you?
I do, and I did other team efforts also, and I must say that was one of those times in someone's life, with a bunch of our lives together, where, you know, the sun and the moon aligned and everybody was, there was nothing negative sort of from start to finish. Everybody was getting along and the horses were all in good order and everything went according to schedule and there was no stress. And I know from other efforts that I've been involved with, it's not always the case. So, you know, from every perspective, that was a really good time.
Well, it certainly was, and lots, of course, to celebrate. But I want to relive the whole experience for you. But before we do, Sue, let's put this into context, because obviously the silver medal came right behind the Germans, and they never have a shabby team anyway. Just to remind everybody that Nadine Kappelmann rode Farbenroth, Ulla Salzgeber rode Rusty, Klaus Hussenbeth rode Piccolino, and Anne-Katrin Lissenhoff rode Renoir UNICEF. I mean, a very powerful team. So for the Americans to come right behind them in any major championship like this must in itself have been hugely satisfying to every one of you.
It was amazing. I mean, we all knew what it meant and how it hasn't happened before and it hasn't happened again after. It was huge. It was really huge.
Well, let's go back to the beginning and obviously the selection trials and knowing that you were going to make that team again. Can you remember how that event unfolded and the news of making the team, how that reached you?
To the best of my recollection, that was a trial that we had at Gladstone, and it was significantly in advance, and there was a selected number of horses, riders that from the results of that trial, and this is my recollection of it, because every event that you make a team for, that, you know, there's a different sort of bunch of ingredients. But I believe like the top three were in on the team without no need to sort of fight it out further for the slots from the time that Gladstone happened. And so I was in that group. I believe it was the top three. And so from the time of completion of the trials, you kind of know your destiny and you know where it's all going. Other situations I'd been in, you know, you much like what's happening this year, there was continued duking it out, if you will, in Europe after certain results from the national selections. And this particular time, that was not the case for me, and that was great. I knew, you know, barring horrible unforeseen injuries or health problems or whatever, I was on the team. So that was great. That was a good way to start.
And tell us about the travel plans, Sue. How far ahead of the games did you travel to Europe and then down to Spain?
That was a year where there was a team sent to Aachen. And Aachen was directly after the Gladstone Festival of Champions trials. And I know for me, specifically, Flim Flam was having gastric ulcer symptoms. And my veterinarian advised me not to jump on an airplane right there after the trials. And so I did not leave immediately and compete in Aachen. There was select members of the team did go over and do Aachen. And then they were based largely, a lot of us were based at Klaus Bappenholz, who was the coach at the time. Lisa Wilcox was somewhat down the road, a reasonable drive, with Ernst Hoyos training there.
Relevant,
yeah. Who, I mean, she had just been, second in the world the year before in the European Championships. And, I mean, she was the European addition to the program, but had her, you know, her ongoing coaching situation. So she stayed there. And I believe Christine Traurig who ended up as an alternate, if I'm remembering correctly, was at her longtime trainer, Johan Hinneman. But the rest of us were, Debbie and Gunther and myself were based at Klaus Falkenhaus. And that's a very homey situation. Klaus and Judith really make you feel at home and take good care of you, and apartments for grooms and laundry facilities and group dinners. And then they also made dinners where the people who were located a little bit away that I described earlier came and joined us. The care and the situation for the horses was really, we'll call it warm and fuzzy, with, you know, horse friendly and, you know, a good environment to recover from the trip and train well, and the atmosphere was really nice. And so that, of course, contributes to the whole stress or not stress of a trip. And the people who did Aachen were ahead of me, and then I flew over. I think we gave Flim some weeks to sort of recover in his gastric situation. And then I flew over and joined them and spent the rest of the time organizing there before we went to Jerez. So for me specifically, it was a pretty low stress setup, if you will.
Well, a very relaxed atmosphere as you went into those games then, and right in the very bottom of Spain. It was all the way down to the south coast, wasn't it? A long trip down there. And, of course, it was a temporary facility there in Jerez. So tell us a little bit about that, what it was like to be stabled there and the riding facilities and what it was like to ride in that arena.
It was quite good, quite nice. We flew, all the teams flew from various locations. The location that we flew from was Münster, Germany, which is, you know, you could walk to Münster from Klaus's. I am exaggerating, but it was very close. And it was also close for Christine and for Lisa. So, I mean, the horses had a 25-minute ride to the airport, if you will. And then we flew directly in chartered airplanes to Jerez. And our team vet flew with them. So, and this was in the day of Mitch Leach, who was the team vet, and by then I'd done three or four team situations with her, and so I knew what a fantastic person she was to trust and to have on board, and she flew with us with the horses, and that all set up in Jerez. So everything was smooth. Hotel was really nice. The footing was super. The stabling, you say it was temporary, but I don't remember it that way. It was the permanent concrete building. It was quite nice and cool with a high roof.
But the arena, I'm thinking that the stadium, wasn't it?
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe they put on top of a soccer field or something, perhaps, but, you know, it was all top notch. There were no compromises there. Which, of course, is fantastic. And the weather was good. In Rome, we got flooded.
Yes.
So, you know, we were on a parking lot. That was definitely temporary. Even the stalls were, you know, tent stalls. And so I have a memory of all our feet, you know, standing with it in our arms, trying to keep it from getting saturated with, you know, a half a foot of water running through the parking lot where our horses were stabled. So this was quite luxurious and nice. It was a good setup, definitely.
Yes, as you say, the stadium, I think, was a sports stadium, but it was converted for the event, obviously, as so many are, and, mm-hmm. and made horse-friendly with good footing. It was a big space to ride in, though, and I'm sure you've ridden in very big spaces, obviously, at major championships.
Yes.
But what was the atmosphere like for you to ride in there, Sue?
Well, I'll tell you what was the thing amongst all the riders was they had these cameras on booms. And so, okay, so everybody was far away. You had a lot of space, but those cameras were not. And they followed you, like you see them now on some you know, sports coverage. But, they, you know, try to explain that to your horse. And they had them, they must have been motion sensing also. They were hooked up down sort of by the letters. Also, there were cameras. And okay, so the horse can get used to that, except they moved when you went by because they had some kind of a, like I said, a motion sensor or something that meant that they followed you. So having said that, everything was far away. It was one of the more challenging venues for me because of this camera situation.
Yes, and you seemed, as you say, to be very far away with the arena, within the arena. So therefore, the spectators were further away from you too. But as we built up through the competition, the crowds got really quite intense by the end of the week, and it was quite exciting, of course, when you after winning the team medal and going down to the finish line, so to speak, with the final classes. Talk us through those, how they rode for you and how the horse was performing. Was he going the way you expected by the time you got to Jerez?
You know, I'm going to say that was his last gig, and it was the pinnacle of his career. And he, you know, this was his third games, the fourth sort of national team that he'd made, and he didn't owe anybody anything by then, I guess. And he was really great. Highest scores of his life. And you know, for me, the biggest thing in a situation like that really is to carry the team, to get a good score for the team, and to contribute effort. That's the most important thing to me in a situation like that where you're on a team. And so I felt relieved and happy that was the way the rides came off. Was huge for me. And then, of course, you know, with Lisa and Debbie doing so well and taking everything up to the place where we ended up silver and you know, was that Brentina's first, I think, her first team experience? And so, you know, the judges were sort of deciding what they would do with her next to Bob and Bro and whatever, you know? And so there was a lot of excitement about that because she did so well. And of course, the medal. So for me, you know, it was win-win-win. Everything went well.
Well, after winning the team medal, the confidence and the morale amongst all of you must have been so high, and that obviously helps going in to the next competition, the Grand Prix Special and the Kerr. How was Flim Flam taking it all? I mean, how was his fitness and endurance then? Because it's always a long haul, isn't it, a major championship?
You know, I think, like, having a horse that's fit enough is kind of my thing. That horse went out twice a day, his whole, like, from the time he was seven till the time he retired. I mean, I was really just walking, hacking. But I was kind of big on his whole fitness program. And you know, when it's a three-effort situation, which pray you end up in that situation where you wouldn't make it into the freestyle, I was experienced at going into that situation with a horse that was ready for that. And so, I mean, I felt really good about all that. Unfortunately for me, the riding under the lights at night with the cameras, the motion cameras that were down by letters really got to him. That whole atmosphere really got to him in the freestyle, and that wasn't up to par. But for me, you know, the team thing was really why I was there and what was really important, and that was there he really shone. It was during the day, and they actually didn't have the moving down right by their feet cameras until the freestyle night. So that atmosphere, I have to say, did compromise things a bit. But by then, I don't want to say it didn't matter, because for sure it does, but then it didn't matter.
But of course, all eyes were then on Lisa and Relevant and Debbie with Brentina.
Totally. Absolutely, right.
So, you know, terrific team camaraderie there, cheering them on. Jessica Ranshausen, of course, was your chef to keep. A very special event for all of you, Sue. What would be your biggest memories as you take away from those games and right after the celebrations, of course?
The celebrations, of course, and I don't want to sound corny, but the camaraderie, it didn't start with the medal. That particular trip that effort was, like I said, the sun and the moon aligning, a group of people, a group of coaches, a group of support staff, where everything was meshed and everybody had this the support and the group sense was like no other effort I've been involved with. And that was before the medal. That was before we even did well. For sure, it helped with everything. But it was a precursor. It wasn't something that came on because of success. Really, for real. I know it sounds corny, but for real, that trip.
And I'm sure that
was Debbie's first trip. In such an event, and I turned to her when I was done, and I said, "Don't expect it to go like this every time."
Absolutely. Well, that was one to certainly set the stage for her career in partnership with Brentina. But coming
Absolutely.
Out of that, there must have been some wonderful celebrations right after. Are you going to give anything away now? You're far enough in your rearview mirror now to be able to tell us a few secrets of what happened in those celebrations.
Oh my God! I don't think there was one. I don't remember anything. We were all happy. We all had dinner, but I don't remember any crazy celebrations. You're gonna have to. Maybe for somebody else doing it. I don't know.
Well, I'm sure there
for
was.
For real, not.
I'm sure there was. And then coming home, obviously, to remember it all, share it with your family and so on. I mean, that's one that will last a lifetime. And where is the medal hanging now, Sue?
Well, it's in Fritz Kundrin's house, because here's how that deal worked. From Sydney, we had a copy made of the bronze medal, and I got the real one and he got the copy. So then for Jerez, he got the real medal, and I've got the copy. And my copy is it's in my bedroom in a little box. But the real one is with Fritz, the owner of Flim Flam. And that sounds perfectly fair to me. I mean, I got the first one.
Absolutely. I think that's very fair.
Yeah.
And a partnership.
The real deal I have from Sydney, and he has the real deal from Jerez.
Yeah, and obviously a partnership that you will remember forever. And what a wonderful World Equestrian Games that was for you. So I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing those memories with us.
It's been really fun to relive it all with you, and I think it's a nice thing what you're doing. It's going to be fun for everybody to hear. I can't wait to hear what some of the other competitors say.
And on next week's episode, we'll be visiting the Aachen World Equestrian Games back in 2006. And you can follow the action from this year's games on the website at usdf.org. Just follow the link to the WEG blog. And whilst you're on the website, don't forget to visit eTrack, the USDF's online learning center and resource for dressage and equine education. That's usdf.org. And a reminder that this podcast is available as a free subscription on iTunes, where you can download it to your smartphone app or MP3 player and listen to it on the go. The USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.